Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Wolverine Confidential Podcast. I am Andrew Kahn.
I'm Ryan Zook.
And I'm Aaron McMahon.
On this special episode, we discuss Jim Harbaugh's latest comments on the quarterback battle between Cade McNamara and J.J. McCarthy, and bring you some breaking news on a transfer into the program. That and more coming up on Wolverine Confidential. Okay, guys, good to be with you here again. Thursday morning, August 18th. I just saw you at availability yesterday. We did the podcast earlier in the week. This is good. This is good ramping up to the actual season when seeing you guys multiple times a week. It's good. Good little warm up here. So let's talk about what we heard yesterday from Jim Harbaugh, because maybe it was a little different than what we'd heard in the past, or at least, you know, last season when it was, you know, Cade McNamara is our starter. He's the guy to beat, you know, not saying he couldn't be beat. Now he's saying he's got two starting caliber quarterbacks, and you know they're gonna battle it out here through the preseason and potentially into the season. What did you guys make of Harbaugh's comments yesterday?
Well, it's certainly notable because I think we mentioned last week in the pod, Jim had said that typically in these quarterback situations where there's competition, one guy tends to separate himself, you know, 9-10 practices into camp. Well, they're past that point now. They're in the second half of camp. They're kind of coming down the final stretch, so to speak. And Jim says there really hasn't been any separation. I asked him point blank yesterday, Wednesday, you know, if there was any, and he said they both continue to elevate their game on a daily basis. And he said it's pretty tight. He's made no decision on a starter. In fact, it sounds like he's pretty willing to let this thing play out as long as it needs to. And that includes going into the season is what he said, which I think is interesting because, you know, even in years past where Michigan has had quarterback competitions, I think back to like the Wilton Spate, John O'Korn times, especially that was, you know, well documented. It was basically the main storyline in the Michigan Amazon Prime series a few years back. He wants it named, you know, before the first game. In that instance, I think it was a couple days before the first game. Now in years past, Jim has been pretty, you know, willing to name a starter, you know, a few weeks before. In the case last year with Cade McNamara, he was named the starter, you know, midway through camp. He did that with Shea Patterson. That doesn't seem to be the case this year. Now, obviously, we're not privy to practice. We can't go in there. Big Ten Network was allowed in the door Wednesday, part of their kind of preseason tour where they're kind of going across the conference and going to different campuses. But it sounds like from Jim, and he said, you know, ask the Big Ten Network guys. So you don't think I'm lying, but he believes that this is a legitimate competition. These guys are neck and neck, which I think is telling in some ways. But it's going to make for some drama here down the stretch and maybe, you know, could spill over into the non-conference schedule.
Welcome to the transfer portal age there, McMahon. It's not surprising that they're waiting as long as possible just because, you know, you want to have two solid quarterbacks on the roster. And yeah, I mean, we've mentioned this on the pod before. It wouldn't be surprising to see them continue to battle into the season because you have three cupcakes to begin the season. They're both going to get some playing time. And then you can kind of gauge from there, who do you want to go into Big Ten competition play as your starter? So I did find it interesting that he said, he didn't really like the idea of a rotation within the same game. We might see one guy play most of the games when they really count and get into Big Ten play. But yeah, I mean, I wasn't really expecting much out of Jim on Wednesday, and he kind of delivered on that, saying that, yeah, this competition is still ongoing.
I'll go one step further and say I wouldn't be surprised, you know, assuming this competition continues to play out in the camp and into the start of the season, one guy gets one start one game and the other guy gets a start the next game. And I think the question posed to Jim yesterday was, like you said, are you willing to kind of alternate series? You know, one guy plays one series or in some cases two series and then bring the next guy out. In that case, it's almost hard to get in a rhythm. You know, you're kind of playing or looking over your shoulder, worried about making a mistake and everything else. Whereas I think you can, if you give a guy a start for a full game, giving him a heads up that, hey, you're the guy today, it at least allows him to get in a rhythm and show what he can do. But yeah, it's going to be real fascinating to watch this play out. I mean, it's been proposed out there that maybe they use a non-conference schedule as kind of a, you know, an opportunity to see what these guys can do in game situations. But yeah, I'm real curious to see how this plays out. It wouldn't surprise me if it's a, you know, a elongated version of what we saw last year. And we've talked about this in weeks past where one guy starts and probably Cade and they play JJ a little bit more, you know, toward the back end, but I don't know. Jim made some comment yesterday about folks who say that, you know, if you don't have one quarterback, you don't, or if you have two quarterbacks, you don't have any quarterbacks. He doesn't like that comment. He thinks it's archaic or whatever the case may be. But I think he's genuinely wanted this for some time since he's gotten to Michigan. He always talks about competition and how it brings out the best in guys and everything else. But I truly believe that he likes what they have at this point. I think if you're an unbiased observer, I think you saw what Cade was able to do last year on the field. They won the Big Ten title. They had all the success. But you can't deny the talent, the ability of JJ McCarthy. So it's, I think it for Jim, I think he looks at it as a win-win situation. I don't think they can lose whoever they end up with. The tricky part is balancing this and trying to figure out who you go with and how much they play and everything else. Because, you know, if you do go to a two quarterback situation, you risk alienating one of them. And we've talked about it before, you know, in the age of the transfer portal, guys can leave rather quickly. So I can't wait to see how this plays out, because I think for the first time in Jim Harbaugh's tenure at Michigan, he legitimately has a quarterback competition that he wants to see play out. He generally wants to see. So it's, I don't know, fascinating times.
I think the precedent for this, and if you're Michigan, kind of the blueprint is what happened at Clemson several years ago. You know, in 2017, Clemson went 12-2. They got to a Sugar Bowl with Kelly Bryant as their quarterback. He then started the next year as an upperclassman through four games. Clemson was 4-0. Kelly Bryant was playing well. I mean, completing 67% of his passes, you know, not giving the ball away. He was, you know, a running threat, you know, and Clemson was winning games often by blowouts at a, you know, close win against Texas A&M. But again, 4-0, and he's splitting time with a freshman named Trevor Lawrence in games. And, you know, some games it was Bryant who threw more passes. You know, at least one of those games, it was Lawrence, especially then in that fourth and final game against Georgia Tech, a blowout win. You know, Lawrence threw 18 passes to Bryant's 10, and Lawrence threw you know, four touchdowns in that game, and you know, was a running threat as well. And he made the move. Dabo Swinney made the move to bring in the true freshman and replace a guy who had been successful and effective, and Clemson keeps winning 15-0 national champs. So like that's the blueprint. But it was like, at the time, if you remember, it was this is curious, because, you know, you've got a guy, an incumbent, that's getting the job done, but Swinney felt like the other guy could be even better and take him to greater heights, and he was right. I don't know. You think that's an apt comparison? Could something like that happen here?
I think it's spot on, and I'm glad you brought it up, because it's a perfect example of what we may see this year, you know, and that's not taking anything away from any one of the quarterbacks or Cade or whatever else. But when you think you've got a superstar quarterback and he's on the precipice of breaking out and he's got that year under his belt of experience, and you're in a way ready to take the training wheels off and just let him go. And that's a very real possibility this year. I think the first couple of games are going to decide a lot. I think, you know, I think we're probably going to see a lot of Cade. He's going to have to kind of fend JJ off and show that he has taken a step and improved his passing game and everything else. Because you can't deny Michigan has, I think they're better equipped to throw the ball this year than they were last year. Yes, they have a strong offensive line back. They got some impressive running backs, but they keep talking up the tight ends and their playmaking ability, and the receivers room is being loaded. And Jim Harbaugh has gone the step of saying the receiver room might be the best he's had since he's gotten to Michigan. If that is the case and that is all true, then you would be a fool not to utilize them. And mm-hmm. If you're going to utilize them, I think your best case scenario is going with the quarterback with the better arm and the more playmaking ability. And that arguably, maybe not even arguably, is JJ McCarthy. So it's a weird situation. I think it's a good situation. I think either way you go, I think they're in decent hands. But yeah, I think that's a great comparison, and very well maybe a And you said a blueprint of what Jim Harbaugh does this fall.
Counterpoint to that is if you know you have all these playmakers and guy and a solid offensive line, maybe you go with a guy like Cade who you trust to not turn the ball over as much and know that there's so many options that he could go to. All he has to do is make the right decision more often than not, and you're going to be able to put up some points. So, yeah, it's a tough decision for the coaching staff. And, yeah, I'm glad I'm not paid the big bucks to make it because it seems like it's going to be a tough call.
It's important to point out, too, turning the ball over is often a symptom of inexperience and or lack of confidence in what you're doing. I think we saw that early on, you know, when Michigan brought in Josh Gattis to kind of revamp the offense and change things. You saw that early on with Michigan. They couldn't hold on the football. Shea Patterson alone had a ton of turnovers. And obviously that's not unique to his situation, but it goes back to lack of confidence, just a, you know, lack of familiarity of what's going on. Now that JJ has a year under his belt, I suspect he's cleaned some of that up. But you're right, that is obviously a big measure. Jim Harbaugh has said that. You know, in determining who the starting quarterback will be, they're going to look at the quarterback that can move the offense the best and put points on the board, but B, also hold on to the football too. So obviously those are big factors. Obviously we're not privy to camp. We don't know what's going on behind the scenes, but if Jim and the coaching staff say this quarterback competition is neck and neck, that signals to me that JJ has cleaned some things up because as we saw last year, Cade was very good at holding on to the football and not turning it over. So it tells me that, you know, JJ has improved there.
I think it's worth noting. I'm shocked Zook didn't chime in here, but Trevor, Kelly Bryan in that example I gave was in the transfer portal before Clemson played its next game after Lawrence was announced as a starter. He didn't even actually take the job yet. He was just announced as such. And Bryan bolted. I don't think you can make a decision based on that, though, because, I mean, that's just the nature of the sport. Guys are transferring. You can get someone in the portal, too. So I think you got to go with the best guy, not worried about that. Do you lose any of the other teammates if you make the change? Because you know they're behind Cade. Not that especially the freshmen don't feel a connection with McCarthy, but it would be interesting to see how that plays out. But I don't know. We heard all this talk last year that McCarthy was the guy who could take them to that next level. Well, maybe the bar has been raised because McNamara took them to the next level and beat Ohio State. So the next level is now beating Georgia. I'm not sure who your quarterback was. You were winning that game last year with that Georgia defense. So, you know, fine. But if the true next step now, the next hurdle to clear is not just getting into the playoff, but winning it, then maybe that's the decision. But it sure seems like he's going to have to see what happens in games because both guys, it doesn't seem like either's going to relinquish the job to the other in camp. So it's kind of going to be what happens in games. And as we've talked about, the schedule sets up to allow for, you know, plenty of playing time for a lot of different people, you would think, in those first three or four games.
Yeah, and I think this, in a way, too, that the fact that JJ is still neck and neck with Cade obviously speaks to his talent, his ability, and I think he does things differently, you know, does things differently from Cade. But remember, he didn't throw in the spring at all. So he's kind of coming off a cold arm. He's still getting the swing of things. They do have a, you know, different coordinator, or at least one different coordinator. So like they've changed some a little bit, different voice, different play call sheet, whatever the case may be. So the fact that JJ is still there neck and neck, I think speaks volumes to his ability and the fact that, you know, they obviously like what he does and his talent. The fact that he took 5, 6, 7 months off and he's able to come in and right away and still compete, I think, you know, tells you his ceiling is so high. And I think the Michigan coaches realize that.
Okay. We have some news as we said, it just kind of broke this morning. The Michigan football team has brought on a new player and that's for this season, correct? Tell me about him.
Yeah, that question is up in the air. But before, yeah, the news broke last night, actually, late Wednesday night. I'll give credit to the folks over at the Wolverine on 3. They broke the story first, but trying to get this name correct. Iyabi Anoma is enrolled at the University of Michigan. His name is in the student directory. It went in yesterday. A Michigan football team spokesman confirms he's transferred to Michigan. He's a graduate transfer. He's had several stops now. It's important to point out he's a former 5-star recruit at high school, so heck of a talent. He's a linebacker, 6'3", I don't know what he's listed at now, 6'6", 270 at last listing. So he's a big dude, athletic dude. He comes to Michigan from the University of Tennessee, Martin, an FCS school. It was his third stop since coming from high school. As I mentioned, former 5-star recruit out of high school. He was a top 5 player nationally So a lot of talent here. A lot of folks liked him. He started his collegiate career at the University of Alabama. So it just goes to show there just the upside. He was dismissed from the University of Alabama, the school, after his freshman year, where he did play in 12 games. He was on the all SEC freshman team at linebacker. He's plays a linebacker edge rusher role. After he was dismissed there, he went to the University of Houston and played for Daniel Holgorsen. Well, I shouldn't say he was on the team. He didn't play. He sat out a year and was dismissed for transfer, and then was dismissed from that team as well. So those are his two stops. Then he went to UT Martin, sat out the 2020 season due to the transfer, had to sit out due to the transfer rules at that point. And then he played last year. He was a all Ohio Valley Conference player or newcomer. He had 9.5 tackles for loss, 6 sacks, heck of an edge rusher. He's got ability. He's got the size. It's just a matter of whether he can stick, and that's the question. He has transferred in. He has joined the football team. It remains unclear if he's eligible to play this year. And I say that because typically grad transfers, when they go from one school to another, they're eligible to play right away just by nature of being a graduate transfer. But the NCAA recently put in this new transfer portal rule where if you aren't in the portal by May 1, you're not eligible to play that year. It's kind of a way to curb the huge number of transfers we've seen in college sports the last couple of years. So he obviously entered this week, which is obviously after the May 1 deadline. After Michigan's team spokesman, if they know if he's eligible this fall, they don't. So we're going to find out here shortly. Either way, I mean, he's only got a week or so or a couple of weeks now to get ready. I suspect that probably won't be enough just in getting in the swing of things and knowing the playbook and everything else. And at the same time, it's probably going to take some time for him to, learn to get the trust, the coaching staff, and everything else. But fascinating addition here. As we've talked about, Michigan hasn't really gotten a ton of guys from the portal the last couple of years. They've been very selective. Oftentimes they are grad transfers. And in this case, it's another grad transfer.
Yeah, talk about out of the blue. I mean, I don't think this was on many people's radar, but I mean, when you look at some of his background and realize, oh, he's been dismissed from two different teams, you're like, well, that doesn't seem like a guy Michigan would be interested in. But then you realize he's from St. Francis Academy in Baltimore, and he was formerly coached by Biff Poggi, who is now on Jim Harbaugh's staff. You're like, all right, there's a connection there. I'm sure Poggi knows him pretty well and believes he can kind of turn the corner and be a great addition to Michigan too. So yeah, former teammate of Blake Corum. So yeah, the St. Francis Academy to Michigan pipeline continues here. And yeah, it is going to be fascinating to see how, I mean, yeah, the top five prospect. I mean, there's a lot of talent there. So we'll see how he adjusts and if he plays this season. But yeah, even if it's this season or next season, he could be a solid addition, knowing that Michigan needs edge rushers. And we know how important edge rushers are in this defense.
There are red flags there for sure. You would assume Michigan followed up on them. But it's something to ask Harbaugh once, I guess, this becomes a little more official. But I will say this about the deadline. I mean, I remember talking to a couple of veteran college basketball coaches who have sat on various committees that discuss these things. And they didn't think, for basketball players at least, that deadline would hold up if challenged by a grad transfer, especially. While you did see a flurry of players get in before that May 1 deadline, it's unclear whether it would really hold up. They didn't think it would. You know, if all it would take was even like the threat of like a lawsuit, because at the end of the day, who do you think like a neutral, third party is going to side with? You know, because kid just wants to go to school here and play a sport, and you're making him not do that for a whole year. Like, yeah, you could see how it wouldn't be too hard probably to get him on the field. The problem is they have a game in a couple of weeks, and this is just a little late in the game to be joining and figuring things out. But maybe at that position, there's not a ton to it if you're just saying, all right, you're going in there on, third down plays and, go tackle the guy with the ball.
That is the caveat. If he can get a waiver for the NCAA, again, I don't know how much effort that would take. He theoretically could be eligible. And maybe that's what Michigan and Anoma are waiting on. But Ryan, you can't overstate the connection enough with St. Francis Academy. This is a huge gamble. I mean, this isn't something typically Jim Harbaugh would do. He doesn't typically bring in guys who have been dismissed from other programs, let alone two, and have all these blinking, flashing red lights to him, because Anoma does. I mean, if you face the facts, he's been dismissed from two schools. It doesn't look good. But I will say this, you know, he did graduate within 4 years, which I think speaks a lot to his ability to still do well in the classroom. So it suggests maybe those dismissals were unrelated to classroom activity. He did post on Twitter this morning, Anoma, he basically saying, thanking everyone for getting him to this point. I believe his grandmother recently passed. He's kind of dedicated the season and the rest of his football career to her. And he did say he's turned things around. So it sounds like he has changed. And I do think that connection to Biff Poggi and St. Francis Academy is probably what triggered this move. And what has Jim Harbaugh and his staff thinking, okay, maybe we can, you know, get something out of this kid. He can turn his life around because he's got familiar faces around him. Poggi was in a way a mentor to him at St. Francis Academy. By all accounts, he had a very good high school career. There were no issues there. In fact, in 2017, Poggi's on record as saying, Ayabi Anoma is one of the greatest, one of the best high school football players I've ever coached. So he's obviously got the connection there. He knows his capabilities and his ability. I suspect he had to sell Jim Harbaugh a bit on this. But when you've got familiar faces around you, you're a little bit older and more mature, I think there's the chance there that he can turn things around. We'll see. So it sounds like Michigan is willing to give him the opportunity. We'll see if he gets on the field at all this fall, if he's able to get on the field. But if he can, and if he shows any ounce of ability of what they saw coming out of high school, I think he could do some damage. I mean, keep in mind, Michigan was after him. They recruited him out of high school back in 2017. They obviously lost the battle to Alabama, but he was very interested in Michigan at the time. He liked the school and the facilities and the staff and everything else. So we'll see. It's an obvious connection. It's one that clearly was made probably through Biff Poggi. But again, there's a lot of questions to be answered, whether he's eligible to play this fall, how quickly they can get him in game shape, how quickly they can get him acclimated to defense. And even through after all that, you know, whether or not there's a role for him, because we've seen countless times now here, grad transfers come in and not play much at all, or they're just not able to get a role. So we'll see here. Interesting move. Like Ryan said, it kind of came out of the blue. But nonetheless, it was certainly a newsworthy Thursday morning here.
We've got another piece of news, too, and that's something we discussed last week, but it's now happened. The Big Ten has announced its new media rights deal with a variety of networks not named ESPN, CBS, Fox, NBC, and then its affiliates such as the Peacock streaming service. It's a 7-year deal. It begins next year, 2023, and it's worth a reported $7 billion, a billion with a B. And I guess the Big Ten, you know, knows it might be, well, it's going to be adding a couple members here in a couple of years in UCLA and USC, and could be adding more. So therefore, it you know, reserves the right to up that total, I guess, up the bill to, you know, possibly into $10 billion range, according to reports. So I don't know. Again, I think that it helped Michigan and, you know, Ohio State probably too, to have that ESPN noon slot so often. That's just a channel that people turn to, noon Eastern time. Oh, college football's on. Let me just put on ESPN. And there's Michigan. There's the winged helmet. There's the big house. Did it help them actually win games when all is said and done? I don't know. But I think it probably did. It did, you know, the sports as a front porch of a university, right? And I think it brought eyeballs to the school. And in the end, you know, the whole purpose is to then generate more applicants to the school. And that's kind of how you raise money when all is said and done. So, I think that hurts, but, you know, this is the wave of the future. I think it'll be harder for fans to watch games overall, especially older fans trying to figure out a game on Peacock. I know that was a problem for Notre Dame fans last year, and can be frustrating, but here we are. It's a large stack of cash for the conference.
Yeah. The bottom line is these athletic departments in the Big Ten are just going to be breaking in more money every year, at $1 billion a year. It's a nice chunk of change for all these schools. The TV network will be something that I think adjust. But again, most of all these networks, Fox, CBS, and NBC, they're all on linear TV. They're pretty easy to get. You just have to figure out where your games are being played. But remember, I mean, the last couple of years, Fox has done a nice job of kind of building up its Big Ten footprint, its Big Ten games. I mean, a couple of Michigan's most watched games last year, and they were some of the most watched college football games of the year were on Fox. So they weren't necessarily on the ESPN network. So it is a move. It's going to be different. I think it's going to take some time to get adjusted to. CBS, in fact, put out their college football theme song this morning and with a running video of Big Ten highlights. So I think some folks that tune in to, you know, CBS every Saturday are going to have to be adjusted as well, especially down the SEC. So it's all about the money. You're going to bring in more money for these schools and these athletic departments. You know, not that necessarily Michigan needs it, but certainly the bottom barrel of the Big Ten, the Rutgers and the Indianas and the Marylands, sure fare to benefit well from these the increased dollars.
None of it's flowing our way, that's for sure. But you know, we'll be there. We'll be there to cover these games, in print. All right. Well, this was, again, special episode. A lot to talk about, and we'll be back, next week with more coverage leading up to the start of the football season, September 3rd. Thanks for listening.